Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Genesis chapter 37. I'm going to do the first 17 verses, and I'm going to call this section of Scripture, Joseph Dreams Big. Our context is this. In chapter 36, we saw the descendants of Esau. So Isaac had Esau and Jacob. His descendants, according to Esau, are now dealt with in chapter 36. Now we're going to look at Isaac's descendants through Jacob, which, of course, is the promised line of the Messiah. And Jacob's descendants, of course, are the famous 12 patriarchs. So now we're getting into some very important history of Israel stuff. We'll start now in verses 1 and 2 in Genesis 37. Now Jacob lived in the land where his father had sojourned, in the land of Canaan. These are the records of the generations of Jacob. Joseph, when 17 years of age, was pasturing the flock with his brothers while he was still a youth, along with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought back a bad report about them to their father. Verse 1, Jacob lived in the land. Yes, he did live there, and he was later buried there. Let's talk about his burial first. As we see, as we go through the story of Jacob and Joseph and the brothers, Jacob ends up dying in Egypt. We read in Genesis 49:29-30, he says to his brothers as he's lying on his deathbed, then he charged them, his sons, not his brothers, his sons, and then he charged them and said to them, I am about to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the cave that is in the field of Machpelah, which is before Mamre in the land of Canaan, which Abraham brought along with the field from Ephron the Hittite for a burial site. Now, if there's one place in the Bible that is identified with absolute precision, with more and more and more names, it's Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob's burial place, the Cave of the Patriarchs, as it's called now. This was in Hebron. In Hebron, there was a field there, where there was an oak there called the Oak of Mamre. Mamre was a person who had an oak, and then there was a field there called the Field of Machpelah, and the Field of Machpelah had apparently been bought by Ephron the Hittite, and Ephron the Hittite sold that field to Abraham, and there was a cave in that field, and that's where they were buried. So, a little bit elaborate, but it's important. I'm getting to the point here is that Jacob lived and died in the land. Remember the promised land, the promise, the famous promises that were made to Abraham of land, offspring, and blessing. Well, the land is important, and that's probably why Moses mentioned here Jacob lived in the land. We read also in Genesis 50:13 how Jacob ended up dying in Egypt, but his bones were carried back so they could be buried in the land of Israel, the promised land. Genesis 50:13, for his sons carried him to the land of Canaan and buried him in the cave of the field of Machpelah before Mamre, which Abraham had brought along with a field for a burial site from Ephron the Hittite. So Jacob said, please bury me there in Hebron. And the son says, we'll carry your coffin back. And they buried his bones in Hebron, in the field of Machpelah before Mamre, which Abraham had brought from Ephron the Hittite. That's Hebron. Before the Oak of Mamre, that's Hebron. Now, Joseph was also buried in the land of Canaan. He wasn't buried at Hebron. He was buried at Shechem. And tradition says that his 12 brothers were also buried at Shechem, which was to the north. Hebron is to the south of Jerusalem. Shechem is to the north a little ways. We read in Genesis 50, verses 24-25, Joseph said to his brothers, I am about to die, but God will surely take care of you and bring you up from this land to the land which he promised on oath to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. Then Joseph made the sons of Israel swear, saying, God will surely take care of you, and you shall carry my bones up from here. Now that happened during the Exodus over a century later, but Joseph was hot on being buried in the promised land. He didn't want to be buried in Canaan because that promise to Abraham, land, offspring, and blessing, that promise which was repeated several times to Abraham and to Isaac and to Jacob, that land promise was deep in the bones of these patriarchs, and he wanted to go back to Israel too, just like his father Jacob did. Now let me point out a harmonization problem here. Acts 7 verses 15 and 16 records Stephen's speech before the Sanhedrin as he was about to be executed, stoned to death. And this is what Stephen said, and Jacob went down to Egypt. He and our ancestors died there, were carried back to Shechem, and were placed in the tomb that Abraham had bought for a sum of silver from the sons of Hamor and Shechem. Well, when Stephen says he and our ancestors died there, it sounds like the next sentence, part of the sentence, they were carried to Shechem. That sounds like Jacob went back to Shechem rather than back to Hebron. We know from Genesis that Jacob died was buried in Hebron, not in Shechem. Well, that's a complicated issue. I've got an interesting site here for those of you who like to get into all the details of this. But the simplest way to take Stephen's statement is this. He and our ancestors died there, and they were carried back to Shechem and were carried back to Shechem. The implied subject, plural subject, is the ancestors were carried back to Shechem. In other words, the patriarchs, the 12 brothers, not Jacob and the 12 brothers. And it was the 12 patriarchs that were placed in the tomb at Shechem as opposed to Hebron. Now let's go back to this idea of the land. Now Jacob lived in the land where his father had sojourned, the emphasis on the land. We know from verse 14 that Jacob is now living in Hebron. Remember, he had buried Isaac in Hebron a couple chapters previous. That's where we had left him off. The last we see of Jacob is at Hebron burying his father in a couple chapters previous. He's in the land. The Eretz, the land. It's important because of that promise to Abraham. Now, it's interesting that the account of the story of Jacob and Joseph begins and ends with reference to the land, the promised land. We just saw here in verse 1, I'll read it again. Now, Jacob lived in the land where his father had sojourned. That's in chapter 37, verse 1 and 2, when we first hear about Joseph's story and Jacob and Joseph's story. And then we go to the last two out of the last three verses of Genesis also refers to the land. This is Genesis 50, verses 24 and 25. Joseph said to his brothers, "I am about to die, but God will certainly come to your aid and bring you up from this land to the land he swore to give to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob." So Joseph made the sons of Israel take an oath, "When God comes to your aid, you are to carry my bones up from here, back to the land." And indeed, Joseph's bones were carried back by the Jews on the Exodus. Some dates of this: Joseph died in about 1585 BC. The Israelites left Egypt in about 1446 on the early date. That was 139 years later. And then in Joshua 24:32, we see that Joseph's bones were finally buried. They were buried at Shechem. Joshua entered the promised land about 1406 BC. Of course, I'm using the dates of BibleQ.net. I don't know that website. I'm assuming the dates are accurate. Anytime you use dates, you got to take them with, sort of with a grain of salt, but they sound pretty accurate to me. So you see that Joseph, in the scriptures, we see that Joseph's bones were carried back to the land. So from the beginning to the end of the account of Joseph, the land is emphasized. The account, the narrative, is bracketed by references to the land, the promised land. Now in verse 2, we read this: "These are the records of the generations of Jacob." Now the question is what does the "these" refer to? Whenever you see a demonstrative pronoun like that, it could either mean the things that came before or the things that came after. If it's "these are the records" referring to something in the past, it sounds like a genealogical table, and that would be the list of Esau's descendants in the previous chapter. Well, I don't think that's what Moses is referring to here. As he writes, he's referring to the history of Jacob and his sons, which is coming up in the next several chapters. And so I don't think there's any reference to the genealogical tables of Esau. I don't think they were nearly as important. So "these are the records of the generations of Jacob." The NIV has the account of the generations of Jacob. The generations of Jacob are the offspring of Jacob, which is mainly the 12 patriarchs. And we're going to start with the next to the youngest one, Joseph, because he was the one that had the birthright. They got the birthright. We see Joseph pasturing the flock with his brothers, his blood brothers and his half-brothers. Well, his blood brother was Benjamin. His half-brothers were the six sons of Leah, the two sons of Bilhah, the concubine, and the two sons of Zilpah. The six sons of Leah were, in descending order of age, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Zebulun, and Issachar. The two sons of Bilhah were Dan and Naphtali. The two sons of Leah's maid, the two sons of Zilpah, Leah's maid, were Gad and Asher. And then, of course, the two sons of Rachel were Joseph and the youngest one, Benjamin. So Joseph is up there pastoring with his 11 brothers, and then he brings back a bad report about them to their father. Now, what was this bad report? Here's some options. And by the way, this is about all the brothers, not just the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, but all of them. Here's some options as to what that bad report was. Option number one, they were quarreling among themselves. This is John Gill's idea. Option number two, they had contempt for me. as John Gill suggests. That makes sense, because in verse 4 it says that the brothers could not even speak to Joseph on friendly terms. Option number 3, they were neglecting the flocks and weren't doing their job. And here's option number 4, all of the above. They were quarreling, they had contempt for Joseph, and they were neglecting the flocks. Now, we don't know, because the scripture doesn't say, but I suspect that Joseph was reporting the situation accurately, and whatever it was the brothers were doing, we know from their subsequent history that the brothers were scumbums. They were probably doing something really bad. So we go down to Genesis 37, 3 and 4. Now, Israel loved Joseph more than all of his sons, and that is understandable, considering that the rest of his sons were bums. I mean, think about it. His oldest son shacked up with his concubine. That was Reuben. And then Simeon and Levi, sons number 2 and 3, they committed genocide on the Shechemites in a matter of revenge that created enmity between the Shechemites and Jacob. This is when Jacob was at peace with them. And then Judah, at some point, shacked up. Well, he was looking for a prostitute, and he accidentally hired his own daughter-in-law, Tamar. I mean, these people were real works of art. I don't know about the rest of them, but I can understand why. Well, the rest of them sold Joseph into slavery. Now, Benjamin, I don't think, was probably involved in that, and he didn't do anything bad. But it's understandable why Israel, that's Jacob, would love Joseph more than all of his sons. And I don't know why he would love Joseph more than Benjamin, actually. But he did. And it says here in verse 3, Genesis 37, it was because, the reason he loved Joseph more than all of his sons, it was because he was the son of his old age. Now, that's an interesting statement. Why would Jacob love Joseph just because he was the son of his old age? Well, we know Jacob was 90 when Joseph was born. And Joseph is 17 now, and Jacob's 107. And you say, well, it was the custom of old men back then to have little children attend to them, lean on the arm. He was a young kid. He was a favorite. I can understand that, but there's one problem with that, is that Benjamin was even younger than Joseph. So why didn't Jacob love Joseph more than Benjamin? Well, some people say that the phrase should be translated this way: because he was a wise son to him. He loved Joseph because he was a wise son to him. Now, we know from Joseph's future history that he was extremely wise. He ended up being a top administrator in the government of Egypt. So that makes more sense, that Jacob loved Joseph more than any of his other brothers is because Joseph was a particularly wise man, a wise son, actually, at this time. However, there's a problem with that. Joseph didn't act particularly wise when he went and told the dreams to his brothers. That was very foolish and naive. But if you take this idea that Jacob loved Joseph because he was the son of old age to him, that would mean he was the son who had the wisdom of old age. He was wise beyond his years, in other words. That's an interesting problem. Well, John Gill speculates there's some other reasons besides the fact that he was the son of Jacob's old age, either because Joseph was young or because he was wise beyond his years. Gill speculates maybe Joseph was handsomer than other brothers. I don't think so. Maybe Joseph was prudent and pious. That could be very well. He was prudent and pious all the rest of his life. Well, anyway, for whatever reason, Israel, i.e. Jacob, remember Israel was the new name that God had given to Jacob the second time that Jacob went to Bethel on his way back from Haran. Now, Jacob loved Joseph more than all of his sons. Now, what does that tell you? That tells you that he made a very, very bad parenting decision, because a parent should never favor one kid over another. And if you want an object lesson, just read on in Genesis. All the total disaster, the family tragedy that happened in the family of Jacob because he favored one son over another. Started out with Joseph getting sold into slavery. That was the first fruit of that poisonous tree of parental favoritism. Now, this was especially stupid on Jacob's part to do that, because polygamous families have all kinds of jealousies between the sons of different wives. That's well known. Well, at any rate, verse 3, Jacob makes for Joseph a varicolored tunic. Did he give the other brothers a varicolored tunic? No. Or the coat of many colors, I think, is how the King James has it. That famous coat of many colors. I can still see the picture in my Sunday school lesson 50 years ago. Now, this was just not any tunic. This robe was very elaborate. The NIV Study Bible says that this robe is speculated to be like the garment virgin daughters of kings wore. We can look at some scriptures and get some hint of that in Judges 5:30. This is a speech, a talk, a narrative, if you will, by the princes of Sisera, the pagan king that got his head spiked by jail in the battle under Judge Deborah, if you recall the story in General Barak and Judges. And so the princesses of Sisera's mother are trying to explain to Sisera's mother why the dead Sisera is not returning to his tent, because he's dead, got a stake through his head. So here's what the princesses say. Are they not finding, are they not dividing the spoil? That's why they're taking so long. They're dividing up the spoil from the victory. Of course, the victory never happened, but that's what they were saying. A maiden, two maidens for every warrior, to Sisera, a spoil of dyed work, a spoil of dyed work embroidered, dyed work of double embroidery. Now, that's the NASB. The King James has diverse colors, and the NIV has colorful garments. So the idea is that if you got colorful garments, that was something rich. That was part of the spoils of war, and that was something wonderful. So you see, this was not just an ordinary tunic that Jacob is making for Joseph. We read in 2 Samuel 13:18, and this is in the New American Standard, "Now she had on a long-sleeved garment, for in this manner the virgin daughters of the king dressed themselves in robes. Then his attendant took her out and locked the door behind her." This is Tamar trying not to get raped by a half-brother Ammon, the son of David, King David. "Now she," that's Tamar, "had on a long-sleeved garment, for in this manner the virgin daughters of the king dressed themselves in robes." Now, in the King James, long-sleeved garment is diverse colors, very colored. The NIV has richly ornamented garment. So apparently, this garment that Jacob gave to Joseph was of similar work that kings gave to their virgin daughters. In other words, this was a high-class piece of fabric. Now, seeing that very colored tunic, coat of many colors, the brothers from that realized that their father loved Joseph more than all of the other brothers, and so they hated him and could not speak to him on friendly terms. Now, that speak is to say shalom. They couldn't even say shalom to him. That's in the original Hebrew, shalom. As Gil, Clark, and Jameson, Foster, and Brown, all three note, they wouldn't even greet him. That's like saying, I'm not going to say hello to you. Jameson, Foster, and Brown say this, quote, "It is deemed a sacred duty to give all this, to give everyone this form of salutation, and the withholding of it is an unmistakable sign of dislike or secret hostility." So things are not going well in the family. We go now to Genesis 37:5-7. "Then Joseph had a dream," and it's going to get worse. "And when he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more." The multicolored cloak was bad enough. Now they've got this nasty dream. "He," that's Joseph, said to his brothers, "Please listen to this dream which I have had. For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf rose up and also stood erect. And behold, your sheaves gathered around and bowed down to my sheaf." Well, you don't have to be a seer, a prophet, or a skilled interpreter of dreams to know what that dream meant. I don't think Joseph was trying to tell the brothers what it meant so he could get an interpretation, although I'm sure that's probably what he was trying to do. But all I can say is, how in the world could somebody be that innocent and that naive? Joseph apparently was at the age of 17. A mature person would have realized the reaction. Hey, you don't go around saying that your brothers are going to bow down to you. And that's especially since the brothers were already probably upset about Joseph's earlier bad report. And surely Joseph could have picked up upon the fact that they weren't even saying shalom to him, weren't even greeting him. They were ticked off with him. But no, he's got to make the situation worse and tell them about this dream. Now, the brothers bowing down to Joseph, that was actually fulfilled later on as we get through Genesis, and Genesis 42:43-44. Genesis 42:6, "Now Joseph was the ruler over the land. He was the one who sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came and bowed down to him with their faces to the ground." Ah, there's a fulfillment of the dream. Genesis 43:26, "When Joseph came home, they brought into the house to him the present which was in their hand and bowed to the ground before him." Another fulfillment of the bowing down. Genesis 44:14, "When Judah and his brothers came to Joseph's house, he was still there, and they fell to the ground before him." In other words, they bowed down to him. We go down to verse 8 in Genesis 37. "Then his brothers said to him, are you actually going to reign over us?" Spoiler alert, yes, they were. "Or are you really going to rule over us?" Oh, yes, they were. So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. Where do we see Joseph actually ruling over his brothers? Well, as Moses was dying at Mount Pisgah, Mount Nebo, He was giving blessings as he approached his death, and this is what he said in Deuteronomy 33:16, "And with the choice things of the earth and its fullness, and the favor of him who dwelt in the bush," that's talking about Yahweh, "let it come to the head of Joseph. Let Yahweh's blessings come on the head of Joseph and to the crown of the head of the one distinguished among his brothers." And we see in 1 Chronicles 5:2 that Jacob's birthright actually belonged to Joseph. He was the one that got primogeniture, not Reuben, the oldest son. 1 Chronicles 5:2, "Though Judah prevailed over his brothers and from him came the leader, yet the birthright belonged to Joseph." Well, now, let's ask a question here. How did Joseph get the birthright? Now, normally you would think it would go to the oldest son, and if the oldest son, the father didn't like the oldest son for some reason, it would go to the second son and so forth. Well, if you recall, the oldest son, Reuben, had sex with Jacob's concubine, Bilhah. That is not the way that you win favor with your father. That's why he lost his inheritance. And then Simeon and Levi, Simeon's son number two, Levi's number three, they lost the chance at the birthright because of the murders of the Shechemites in revenge of their daughter's Dinah's rape, their sister Dinah's rape. And so they committed murder, and Jacob was not happy. Judah, I imagine, lost the chance at a birthright because of his incest with Tamar. But all that is just icing on the cake. The real reason that Joseph got the birthright is because all the other brothers sold him into slavery. Now, Benjamin didn't. He was back home with Jacob, if I recall. He wasn't out there shepherding, but he was younger than Joseph. And so that's why Joseph got the birthright, as 1 Chronicles 5:2 explicitly says, yet the birthright belonged to Joseph. Now, let's look more at this obtaining of the birthright by Joseph. This comes from a website, LaVistaChurchOfChrist.org. Joseph was Jacob's favorite son, but it was because Jacob's sons had treated Joseph shamefully by selling him off into slavery that Jacob decided to give the double portion, also called the birthright, to Joseph. Now, let me back up here. There's a lot of scholarly discussion over, is the birthright the same thing as the inheritance, the double portion? Well, I'm just going to assume it is, like this website article does. The double portion was going to Joseph. And this is, if we read in Genesis 48:5-6, this is at when Jacob's dying in Egypt and he's giving his blessings to his kids. He says this, "And now your two sons, Joseph's two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, who were born to you in the land of Egypt before I came to you in Egypt, are mine." In other words, he adopted them as Reuben and Simeon. They shall be mine. Reuben and Simeon were blood children, so obviously they were Jacob's children, but so would be Ephraim and Manasseh, Joseph's children, Jacob's grandchildren. "Your offspring whom you beget after them shall be yours. They will be called by the name of their brothers in their inheritance." In other words, Ephraim and Manasseh got a double portion. So Joseph got, or his descendants got, a double portion. Maybe not Joseph particularly, but his descendants, Ephraim and Manasseh. Ephraim got a portion, and Manasseh got a portion. So Joseph, through his sons, got a double portion. In a sense, it wasn't totally out of line, since Joseph was the firstborn of Jacob's intended wife, Rachel. Reuben lost the right. I've already mentioned that. And the sons of Reuben, I mentioned all that. So the birthright was removed from the firstborn of Jacob's first wife, Leah, that would be Reuben, and went to the firstborn of Jacob's second wife, Rachel, the favored wife. And so the birthright goes to Joseph. And that's where the patriarchs of Israel come from, through Joseph. Now, after they heard the dream, the brothers hated Joseph even more. That dream added insult to injury. First of all, Joseph had given a bad report about them to their father. He had snitched on them, and you know how people like snitches. And then, of course, the multicolored coat. Oh, look at my beautiful coat. I mean, I don't know what Joseph said, but he probably wore it. I know his brothers saw it somehow. I would have hidden the doggone thing. He's pretty naive, Joseph was. And now they get this dream that they're going to bow down to Joseph. We go now to Genesis 37:9-11. "Now he had still another dream and related it to his brothers and said, Lo, I've had still another dream. And behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars were bowing down to me. He related it to his father and to his brothers, and his father rebuked him and said to him, What is this dream that you have had? Shall I and your mother and your brothers actually come to bow ourselves down before you to the ground? His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the saying in mind." Now, here's some options as to why Joseph did this apparently stupid thing, and I don't think it's just apparent. I think it's obvious that it was stupid to go. They're already mad at you because of the bad report, the multicolored code, and the first dream. And now we're going to give the second dream. So this is the fourth thing that is really getting the brothers ticked off. And of course, we know that all this is happening so God can do good things. You know, all this was meant for the evil. The brother's attitude toward Joseph was all meant for evil, but God meant it for good. Why did Joseph do this, though, these stupid things, looking at it from the human point of view? Well, first of all, he didn't have any common sense. He was young and naive. Second of all, a possibility, John Gill says, is that his brothers had kept their resentment of him hidden, and he wasn't aware that they were angry at him. And I don't know how that's possible. They won't even say shalom to him. They won't even speak to him. And he doesn't realize that resentful? That can't be. John Gill suggests this. Another option as to why Joseph told the second dream to his brothers. Joseph was so innocent he was so free of an attitude of domination, he couldn't imagine what his brothers would think. It didn't even occur to him that they would be upset with him. He was just naively going, what is this? Why are you bowing down to me? I know you're the older brothers. I don't expect you to bow down to me, but my dreams keep saying you will. Well, that might be. He was naive enough to do that kind of thing. But at any rate, he told the dream. Now, let's see. Who are the sun and the moon and the 11 stars? Well, the sun would be Jacob. The sun would be Jacob, Joseph's father. The moon would be Joseph's mother. And the 11 stars would be Joseph's brothers. Now, this time, Joseph told the dream not only to his brothers, but also to his father, Jacob. And his father, Jacob, rebuked him and said to him, what is this dream that you have had? Shall I and your mother and your brothers come down and bow ourselves down to you before the ground? So Jacob was ticked off when he heard the dream, as well as he should be. As John Gill points out, Jacob knew the resentment that this would create with the other sons, and he was probably worried that Joseph would become proud. And he's just 17 years old, and he's going around saying, all the whole family's going to be bowing down to me. I'm going to be the new patriarch. Well, I can understand why Gill got upset. Now, there's one little problem here. If the moon is the mother, when did the mother bow down to Jacob? To Joseph, excuse me. And not only the mother, but also the father, when did Jacob bow down to Joseph? It's not recorded. Those three verses I gave you in Genesis 42, 43, and 44 said the brothers bowed down to Joseph, but didn't say anything about Jacob or his mother. Well, the answer to that is all of Jacob's posterity will pay obeisance to Joseph. In other words, the family of Israel, the father, the mother, and the brothers. But it's not meant to say that each individual member of that family, like Jacob, bowed down, the mother bowed down, and the brothers bowed down. The brothers literally did bow down, but it means all the posterity of Israel, Jacob's house. Now, John Gill says this, all Jacob and Rachel's posterity paid obeisance to Joseph. The Cambridge Commentary for Schools and Colleges says this, quote, Israel in its widest sense as a father's house is to recognize the predominance of Joseph. In other words, not the mother bows down and the father bows down individually, but the whole house together, taken collectively as a unit, will bow down to Joseph because Joseph is going to be the new head of Israel. Here's what Ellicott says, quote, the enumeration of sun, moon, and stars means Jacob, his wives, and his children, that is the whole family, elders and juniors, were to make obeisance to Joseph. It is a general phrase and is not to be too literally interpreted. Well, I had a problem because I always tried to interpret that literally, and I was wondering, well, who is this mother that's going to be bowing down to Joseph in Egypt? That's especially a problem because Rachel's already dead, assuming the dream was given after Rachel had died. I assume it was. He could be referring to Leah because Leah was his stepmother. That's, some people use that for a solution, but we don't have any evidence that Leah actually went down to Egypt. She may have, but it doesn't say. It could be that when Jacob expostulated with Joseph and said, what are you saying? We're going to bow down to you. He could have been saying it this way. Do you really think your dead brother and I and your brothers will bow down to you? That's Adam Clark and John Gill's suggestion. In other words, if your mother was alive, it would be strange that she'd be bowing down to you, but it's even more strange that she's bowing down to you in this dream because she's dead. The NIV Study Bible says this may have been referring to the stepmother Leah bowing down to Joseph. John Gill suggested he could even be Bilhah, who, as the surviving concubine of Rachel, as the surviving maid of Rachel, could have become like a surrogate mother upon Rachel's death. I think that's a stretch. Adam Clark said Joseph had the dreams before Rachel died. Well, maybe so, but then Rachel dies and Rachel's not there to bow down before Joseph at the time of fulfillment. So I think the simplest solution to this little problem is to take sun, moon, and brothers as the general house of Israel is going to be given obedience to Joseph. Now in verse 11, Jacob kept all this in mind. He kept the dream in mind, and I'm sure he later recalled that dream when events showed its fulfillment when he's in Egypt, and he watches this big shot Egyptian government official who he discovers is his son, and all the brothers are bowing down to him. We'll get to that as we move through Genesis. Chapter 37 in Genesis, verses 12 through 14. Then his brothers went to pasture their father's flock in Shechem. Israel said to Joseph, Israel said to Joseph, "Are not your brothers pasturing the flock in Shechem? Come, I will send you to them." And he said to them, that's Joseph said to Jacob, "I will go." And then Jacob said to him, "Joseph, go now and see about the welfare of your brothers and the welfare of the flock, and bring word back to me." So he, that's Jacob, sent him, Joseph, from the valley of Hebron, and he came to Shechem. So we see now that Jacob is he's probably at Beersheba. Well, maybe he just stopped at Hebron after he buried Isaac. Now here we see that Joseph's brothers have moved from Hebron up to Shechem to pasture their father's flock. Remember, Shechem is north of Jerusalem a few miles, and Hebron is south of Jerusalem a few miles. So they moved south to north from Hebron to Shechem. It was very common to move flocks from place to place back then for nomads because they were always looking for better pasturage for their flocks. Now, it's remarkable that the brothers would go up to Shechem. Remember, Reuben and Simeon had earlier killed all the newly circumcised Shechemites because Shechem, the individual man named Shechem, had raped their sister Dinah and then fallen in love with her and asked the brothers for Dinah's hand, which they said, "Sure, yeah, but you got to get circumcised first." And while they were circumcised on the third day in great pain because they had sliced their foreskins off, then Simeon and Levi came into the town and wiped them all out, all the males, and then took the women and children captives. Now, you would think, and Jacob said, "Sons, you've made me odious. My name is odious in this place." So he's down at Hebron now. He's outside of Shechem, but he's sending his kids have gone back to Shechem. You would think the inhabitants wouldn't be too friendly after that previous incident. Well, it could be, you know, the grass is always green up, is better up there maybe, and we need places to put our sheep, and so we're going to take the chance. It might be why Jacob sent Joseph to ask about the welfare of the 11 children, as we'll see here in verse 14 in a couple of verses. Well, actually in this verse. So he, Jacob, sent Joseph from the valley of Hebron, and he came to Shechem. That might be why Jacob sent Joseph up to Shechem, is to find out, are my sons still alive? Have the Shechemites taken revenge on them yet? The distance from Hebron to Shechem, according to John Gill, is about 60 miles. So that's a good ways. The area around Shechem, according to Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown, is blessed with an abundance of water, which means that's a good place for sheep. That's a good long trip for a 17-year-old kid to make in those days, but he did it. Now, the question arises, why would Jacob send Joseph into the teeth of danger back to Shechem, where the Shechemites are probably still pretty mad? Well, John Gill speculates about that, that time might have passed since, well, not just the teeth of danger from the Shechemites. Why did Jacob sent Joseph into the teeth of danger with Joseph's brothers? Surely Jacob knew that the brothers were mad at Joseph. Well, John Gill speculates that time might have passed since Joseph's proud offenses against his brothers, the dreams, the reports, the multicolored tunic and all that. It might have just time had gone by and the brothers had forgotten about it. Maybe Jacob thought that. Or maybe Jacob was thinking, well, sure, the brothers are not going to be happy with Joseph, but surely they're not going to kidnap him and send him to Egypt as a slave. That was probably off his radar scope. We go now to Genesis 37, 15 through 17, and we'll finish this audio. A man found Joseph, and behold, he was wandering. Joseph was wandering in the field, and the man asked him, "What are you looking for?" He, Joseph, said, "I am looking for my brothers. Please tell me where they are pasturing the flock." Then the man said, "They have moved from here, for I heard them say, 'Let us go to Dothan.'" So Joseph went after his brothers and found them at Dothan. Now Dothan is about 13 miles north of Shechem, so he's already gone about 60 miles. He's got to go another 13, 73 miles on foot or on donkey, however he got there. The NIV Study Bible says that Dothan had already become an ancient city by this time, so it was well known in the ancient world there. Now here's some options as to why the brothers had left Shechem. Well, it could be there was just better pasture 13 miles to the north in Dothan, or it could be that they got into some trouble with the Shechemites. Their name was probably still detested there because of their previous massacre of the Shechemites. That's Jameson Fawcett and Brown's speculation. I think that's reasonable, but for whatever reason, they were at Dothan, and Jacob beats them, and we're going to leave it there and pick it up next episode, when we cover Genesis 37, verses 18 through 36, which I will call Joseph's big dreams get him into big trouble. Hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.